It is Locked On Jazz for the 2nd of December. Come here, Jazz fan. Let's sit down. Let's talk. Let's discuss. Let's figure out how bad this really is. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? Welcome to Locked On Jazz, coming to you 48 floors above Philadelphia with a gorgeous view of a lake, or excuse me, of a river, of commute, of gritty Philadelphia, some grit that maybe the Jazz will need. I'm David Locke, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully making your life as a Jazz fan much better, which is a little bit of a task today, I might add. Hopefully we'll figure that out. We'll break through since we've last chatted. The Jazz got smoked by Indiana, beat Memphis, and got historically run out of the building by Toronto. This is not entirely what we expected. This is not an easy road trip. We're playing four of the top five teams in the Eastern Conference on this trip, maybe four of the top six, depending where Boston and Indiana or Miami fly out. We're playing four of the top 10 defenses with an offense that's not in sync. We are on the road seemingly forever. And our travel into Toronto did have, if you listen to both Ron and I pregame as well as after the game, or excuse me, pregame as well as when I did my tour, I said I thought we'd get smoked, that I just was dead tired. And when I've had 8 hours sleep every day and I'm dead tired, I think it's a sign that there's just something wrong with our travel. We've changed the way we're doing our travel a little bit. I'm not sure I get it, but we'll see. It's interesting to me, just a thought I'll throw out there, that everyone's got all these sleep doctors and everyone's changed the way travel's being done. I'm interested to know, like, are road teams winning anymore? Like, is there actually a noticeable impact on that? Like, it'd have to be really curious to me to look into that for all the talk of what we're doing, what the benefit actually is. I don't like sleep doctors because I don't sleep, so I don't really like people who tell me I'm supposed to sleep when I don't. So it's really a personal issue. All right, that's enough of the excuses. We've been waxed twice recently, both in somewhat disappointing manners, and it's, you know, we got to talk about it. Let me just do a short synopsis of Indiana and Toronto and then dig in. So Indiana is interesting. We've lost to them by 70 points in our last three games, which they're not that much better than us. So there's something about Indiana and the way they play that's hard for us. And it's, we've also lost to them every time in November. So the thought I have is that Nate McMillan kind of has a philosophy of how he plays, which is, you know, you play hard, don't screw the game, no gimmickry. And they actually play harder than we do. And they make the game harder than we do. And almost nobody else does that. And so that when we usually play someone, or at least in the years past, we would run our picks and run our systems, and we would make the game really hard on it. It would be no fun to play us. And teams would kind of wilt, and we'd blow a lot of teams out. I actually think Indiana does that to you as well, and so that when we suddenly have Indiana, when we're going up against Indiana, and they're doing the exact same thing to us that we do to other people, it doesn't faze them, it fazes us, for whatever reason, in that matchup. And then the other thing is that, you know, Rudy's kryptonite generally are Valanciunas and Sabonis types. Marc Gasol kind of is this combo hybrid of both of those that causes Rudy some problems, in the sense that he's able to play, you know, both styles, in that he can go outside and kind of body up on you. But the guys that Rudy has the hardest time with are guys that put their shoulder into you and then power up. And Sabonis did on the first two plays of Indiana, and the Jazz kind of wilted that night. Like, they just, you know, as the night wore on, it got harder and harder. This team is not collectively together enough to handle that. Toronto, it was a little different. In Toronto specifically, we're the number one drive team in the league. Every time we drove to the basket, guys came off the wings, reached in, and started to swiped at the ball, their length and speed was overwhelming. And again, our lack of cohesion led our guys just right into the pit of fire, and we turned it over. And as much as I will tell you that turnovers are not that big a deal over the course of a season, I've said numerous times that on a given night they certainly can't be. But more importantly, it's the difference between live ball turnovers and dead ball turnovers. And 11 of our 12 turnovers in the first half of the game were live ball turnovers. They had 11 run-out opportunities, and almost all of our turnovers were at the free throw line or around, where our guys were coming off the curl, driving into the lane with absolutely no vision out. A swipe at the ball made them start to have to pick up the ball sooner than they want to, and then they would lose control of it, and they would turn it over and go the other way, and we just got humiliated. The overall theme to both of these is the same: a lack of cohesion, a lack of toughness, a lack of togetherness, a lack of playing as a group. And a lot of these things that are happening right now are not, we actually go back to the offseason, and they're items we talked about, but we ignored because we were so optimistic and so excited. There were actually, you know, when we started talking about what we thought was going to happen this year and what would take place, we always talked about the positives. We didn't touch on, and the national experts would kind of chime in with the negatives and we would dismiss them. A lot of those things are happening right now. So that is that, and I've talked about this a lot, we have 5 guys who think they're the number one option when they're on the floor. We have almost everyone having to have some sort of a new role. We are going through the same thing that every emerging team has ever gone through, as their young players have to waver between individual accolades and team collective success. We have no bench, which John Hollinger wrote about, which Kevin Pelton wrote about, which everyone wrote about, and we just ignored. And the lack of bench is leading to all sorts of quests to try to figure things out, none of which are working right now. And we're 20 games into the season, which is the quarter point, which is always the moment where I actually start to say, and I've said numerous times, and I will not back off this, the statistical numbers from the first 20 games are way more important to know who you are and where you are than the 20 games at the end. And if you're going to pick the playoffs, go back and look at where everyone is today rather than where they are at the end on whether or not how you think they'll perform in the playoffs. The first 20 games is a far better indicator of how teams are going to perform. To that point, here we are 20 games in the season, 12-8. We are the 21st ranked offense and the 11th ranked defense. Now, our numbers are somewhat skewed at this point because of the fact that we just got blown out by 40 or 30 or 20 or whatever it was, 20. But we also beat some people by 20. Few notes on that. I don't know if this is the stark reality, but few notes on that. We're 12-8, which means we're going to win 49 games. That's exactly kind of where Vegas had us, Hollinger had us, Pelton had us. Maybe they were right. We're 11th in the league defensively. That's not that stunning to me. That's kind of where I thought we were going to be. We're 21st in the league offensively. I'm flabbergasted. I did not see that at all. And that, I have to think, is going to get better. But it's been 20 games. And unless there is some collectiveness amongst the group offensively to try to figure out how to get better, we'll see. We'll dig in deeper. That's the wide-ranging overview of where we are right now in the midst of a really difficult road trip, getting waxed 2 of the last 3 times, hopefully not overreacting to the waxing. We'll continue to talk about. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. I have been driving the Blazer for the last few months and really loving it. The one thing that's interesting is I've never really had a car where everyone stops me and asks me, what is it? Ooh, what car? Oh, is that the new Blazer? It is. And it looks great. It's a super looking car. It drives fabulously. It's quiet. It's well put together. The controls are easy to use. The pickup is great. The size in the car is surprising, considering the fact that it has a kind of a sporty look to it. Check it out at Murdoch Hyundai, located in Woods Cross. It is the Chevy Blazer. Also, there's the renowned Chevy lineup, the Suburban, the Tahoe, the Equinox, the Trax, all of your SUVs, and then the trucks. The Silverado and the Colorado are both truly outstanding. Make sure you head over to Woods Cross, right off the freeway. It's Murdoch Chevy, 90 years in business in Utah. The Murdochs and Chevy combining to bring you the best experience you possibly can have. Check it out, Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross, and check out the good-looking Blazer. Away creates thoughtful products designed to change how you see the world. For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/lockedon and use the promo code LOCKEDON during checkout. By the way, if you're doing all your holiday shopping and you can't visit any, go to lockedonpodcast.com/offers. All right, let's dig into kind of the things I set up. We're not playing collectively. On the offensive end, and that leads to defensive breakdowns. Transition defense was really, really poor. I think this heads to, this sounds probably worse than I mean it. This heads to two things. One is, I think we talked about how many number one options we have and how everybody is going to have to give a little. I don't think anybody has given any yet. Other than maybe Mike Conley, who's probably just basketball miserable. Right? Like he just can't find his way. But Donovan hasn't given. Boyan hasn't given. Rudy's grabbing, not giving. Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay aren't giving. Nobody's given up. There will maybe Donovan late in games, but not a lot. Right? There have been plays late in games in which Donovan is now not having to do everything. We're couching it as a positive. I don't know if he, you know, he's trying to build his legacy or his, you know, spot. The reality of young players in this league, in every group ever, in every generation ever, in John Stockton, Karl Malone, Jeff Hornacek, Adrian Dantley, every group ever in the history of basketball, and frankly, in every job ever, is that an individual wants to establish their own personal value before they're interested in the team. Okay? That's just every salesperson, every business person, every person getting their MBA somewhere, everyone. I can see from my 48th floor, the football stadium and the basketball stadium here in Philadelphia, every athlete to play. This is not a criticism of Rudy, Donovan, Boyan, any of them. It is the reality of where we are as humans. Everybody wants to establish their own personal value before they're going to concern themselves about the team. We've seen this a million times, right? We saw Penny and Shaq have their problems in Orlando. We saw Boston last year never come collectively together. We've seen this a million times. We got a little of that going on, right? Like just nothing. Well, nothing dramatic, but if you watch us play, we're not cohesive. The ball's not pinging. We're not playing as a group. Everyone, here's the tricky part about it. If you ask each guy individually what needs to do to rectify it, they'll give you an answer. They'll admirably put it on their own shoulders. They'll say it's that they need to do this, and actually, that's the wrong answer. Because the answer is not they need to do something, it's we need to do something. And until the answers become we, and then the minute you say we to the media, it sounds like you're actually putting everyone else under the bus. But the answer, quite frankly, is not Rudy Gobert saying, I need the ball more. right? Like, that's not helping the team come together. That's, and so, but that's natural. And he doesn't mean that as, like, he thinks he can help by getting the ball more. Donovan thinks that by shooting more, he helps the team. Boyan thinks that since he scored 34 times with the Jazz in a short period of time, having not scored and only scoring 34 times in his short career, that he will make us better by being more aggressive and scoring more. Those are the best intentions of everyone involved. The answer, though, is collectively doing something as a whole. And we're not doing that at all. There's a lot of my turn. And when we go to the bench unit, when Donovan was playing with the bench unit, the offensive rating was a 99.7 because it was like Emmanuel's turn, then Donovan's turn. It was just terrible. The next part of that is, again, that everybody's being asked to change. Joe's being asked to change. Jeff Green's being asked to go from 27 minutes to 17. Emmanuel Mudiay is being asked to come off the bench, which he's basically done very little in his career. Mike Conley's asking to be the third or fourth option offensively when he's been the number one option for the last 7 years. Bojan Bogdanović is not really being asked to change, and he's the one who's thriving the most. Donovan's being asked to change. Late in games, he doesn't have the ball in his hands anymore. Donovan played point guard a huge amount last year. He's not doing that. Donovan's numbers are always better when Donovan plays point guard. The teams aren't always, but Donovan's numbers are always better when he plays point guard. So there's just a lot of giving that has to be done amongst the group. What do we do well? What do we do well? That's probably the first thing we got to zero in on. We shoot it great. Going into last night, we're the number four catch-and-shoot team in the league. And we're like 28th or 29th in catch-and-shoot attempts. Okay? That would be the first thing. But that is the ultimate. You're not getting catch-and-shoot without collective help. Right? That is the, to me, that statistical note right there is the ultimate of where this team is right now. Okay, we are the number four going into last night, very close to being the number one catch-and-shoot team in the league, and we're 29th in tips. Now, there's parts of it that are the fact that, you know, teams are not leaving our shooters because they're all good shooters and people are staying below Rudy, and, you know, there's all sorts of parts of it. We are still the fourth best catch-and-shoot team in the league. Toronto's now number one after last night. And just to make sure that my numbers are all correct, we are now, after last night, up to, in our shot attempts per game, we are now up after last night, when we've improved it recently, we're now the sixth fewest instead of the second fewest. And we've gotten better at this. Our three-point rate has gone way up. But the catch-and-shoot three is the ultimate collective act. But when Bojan comes off a curl, Bojan has scored 30 points four times this year. Bojan is the number one scorer in Indiana all last year. Bojan's not looking out. When Donovan comes out the pick and roll, Donovan's average is 26 points. He's not looking out. Frankly, when Mike Conley comes off the pick right now, he's not looking out. Because each of them has their own thing they're dealing with. Mike's trying to get himself situated. Donovan thinks he's helping the team by being a scorer. Bojan is a scorer, and in turn, we're now 27th in the NBA in assists per game. The Houston Rockets, who are the isolation king of the world, have more assists than we do. Portland, who always is low in assists because Dame and CJ play with the ball in their hands so much, is the lowest in the league at 20.6, or 20, as are the Knicks, and Cleveland's at 20.6, and we're at 20.9. Now, we also play slower, take less shots. Some of that's a little bit of a not a great, but it's the point is clear, right? I think we're taking the fewest shots of anyone in the league. Well, no, Detroit and Miami have slid below us. But that's a sign of what all the things I'm talking about. So, you know, who are we? Well, we're 20 games in the season, so at right now, in my opinion, like, this is who we are. Now, can we get a lot better offensively? Yeah, if we do all of these things. If we don't, this will be the sixth or seventh seed in the Western Conference. Probably win 48, 49 games. Not be crazily off of expectations from everybody outside of us, but definitely disappointing for us of what we thought and what we projected, and what I projected. Because the 11th defensively is not stunning to me. The 21st offensively is, and I just broke down why. And right now, we actually feel a little bit like Boston last year. Like a little bit like Boston last year. Where it just never, ever, you know, we don't have the Kyrie world is flat element of what's going on or that, but it does feel like it has that non-cohesiveness. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homey. Homey is revolutionizing the real estate market, changing the way in which people buy real estate in a great way. So for years, it was 6% commission, and that's how it worked. And when you bought a house, it was, you know, you might not have realized it, but you were paying for everybody else involved in the whole thing. And now Homey's changing that. So I think you probably know this, but when you buy a home, it's not free. The money you pay for your home is used to pay the seller and then their agent and whatever agent you hire. So, like, if you buy a house, the owner of that house gets the money. Their agent and your agent divide up the money in shares. What Homey is now doing is giving you $5,000 back on the process so that the money that you can then go toward, you know, more buying more house or whatever, or the furniture or the landscape, whatever you do with that money, where you just save it. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's 88588 to find out more about what Homey can do for you. They can obviously sell any home for you. We've talked about that, but they can also buy a home for you, give you all the same aspects of helping you find your dream home, tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and then work to get you $5,000 back. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. Certainly, two things that would help us a great deal is if Joe Ingles and Mike Conley could get things back in order. Now, honestly, I don't think this is what's going on, but honestly, in the offseason, we talked about one of the concerns was our guys are old. Right? We did. I don't know if you remember, but we did. We thought, and I did, I thought, you know what? That's not that big a deal. Both of them are, Joe and Mike are coming off great years. Both of them are at that threshold of where they do get old. And, you know, both of them have characteristics which would say they'll age badly. So Mike's really small, and Joe's not on the peak of quickness. I don't like that he's not athletic because he is really athletic. And he's really long, but he's not on the peak of quickness. And they're one of the misnomers on things is that when people say, well, he doesn't use his athleticism that much so that when he loses a bit, he'll be fine. Yeah, I don't think that's true. I think the exact opposite is true. I think there's a narrow window in which to play inside the NBA. Your athletic abilities have to be inside that narrow window. You might be able to survive on the bottom end of that window or that scale because of your skill set. And then when and if you start to age, if you slip out of that window, you're actually just done. And you aren't effective anymore. Even if it's, you know, Carlos Boozer, I think, is a good example of that. I also have always felt this way on undersized players. Players that, and I've been wrong on Paul Millsap time and time and time and time again on this one, that undersized players, to me, age faster. Now, talking to Kevin Pelton, I was trying to do some research on this in this offseason. Kevin Pelton said, actually, the truth is that guys just age really, really fast and really stark. And it's really stark and really fast when it happens, which you don't realize. But Joe Johnson's a good example. Like, Joe Johnson went from viable to done. And actually, this happens. Like, guys just disappear from the league all of the time. And because they just get old and it just kind of happens and it's just kind of over. I'm not saying that's the case on Mike and Joe, but I'm trying to be very, you know, non-Pollyanna-ish today. And so we really need Mike and Joe to start playing better. Mike is shooting 38% from the field and 37% from three. The 37% from three is getting back to where he wants. He is just not going to the rim at all. In the last five games, he's shooting 30%. In the last 10 games, he's kind of right on his season average. The three-point shooting is great. But that floater has not ever been a particularly high-volume shot, and his trips to the free-throw line are non-existent. Or his trips to the rim are non-existent right now. Might be because we play differently. We have a rolling big instead of a popping big, and so he doesn't have the realm. But in the last few years, Mike's gone from at 27, he went to the rim 28% of the time. Then he went 26%. Then he went 20%. Then he went 25% in his breakout year. Or no, that's the year he got hurt. So really, here's the progression of the last 5 years. 28, 26, 20, 19, and now 13% of his shots at the rim. That's disconcerting at 32 years old. And then not finishing either. He's gone from, in that same span, 59% rim finishing, 55%, 61, 57, 55. Well, we're not counting. Wait, sorry, I screw up. He's got 1 year where he played 12 games. I try to take that out. So let me do that again. He's gone from, in that same span, he went from 59% to 54 to 61 to 55 to now 49. And the floater, which he's hit that 3 to 10 footer in his career at 39%, last year unnaturally at about 49%, is at 34%. That's a little bit of a bummer. Let's see how those things materialize. He's obviously got to get comfortable. This is brand new. It's all a different role. He has not found his Jones. His spot-up shooting is coming back, and maybe that's going to be his role. He's been great late in games. The Jazz have won more games within 5 points with 5 minutes to play than any team in the league. You can see what he brings to the table in those circumstances, and how much he helps the roster just calmly late in games. Joe's another one. Joe's 30. This is another 32-year-old player. Joe is weird. Joe is corner three shooting almost entirely is the issue right now. And he's getting much less, many fewer of them. But Joe has hit. He's gone from taking about 30% of his shots as corner threes, even higher in his first few years. But his career average is 30% of his shots are 30% of his 3-point attempts have been corner threes. This year it's at 17. I think he's 2 of 16 for the season. That's strange. He fixes that, most of his numbers come back. But there's a little bit. He's not turning the corner the same way. He got to the basket 19% of the time last year for his shot attempts. He's down to 12% this year. Like, that's same concept. I don't know. But those two guys have got to play better. Joe's got to anchor that second unit in some way. Joe the ball handler does eliminate Joe the shooter. The lack of passing with guys in the second unit eliminate Joe the shooter all by himself, even if Joe doesn't have the ball in his hands. So that's tough. The other angle is, you know, I'm a big, as I've said, like 20 games in the season. Now we can go get better. Our schedule's been a little harder than average, so we're probably a little better than our numbers. But 20 games in the season, generally the feeling is that 15 of the 18 playoff teams are in. In the Eastern Conference, I actually think all eight are there, unless Charlotte's really going to make an incredible run here. Milwaukee, Toronto, Miami, Boston, Philly, Indiana and Brooklyn are all going to make the playoffs. And then the eighth spot is either Orlando's a game up on Charlotte and a game and a half up on Detroit, who will get healthy at some point here. And that's it. So those are the three teams battling for one playoff spot in the East. In the West, Lakers, Denver, Clippers, Mavericks, Houston, Utah are all in. Minnesota is a game and a half behind us. Phoenix is three games behind us. Sacramento is now tied for Phoenix for the eighth spot. Oklahoma City's making a nice little surge. They've played a brutally hard schedule, and if they things will get better. And Portland, incredibly, has won three in a row. Like, the bottom's not about to fall out for us. Let's not overstate my lack of Pollyanna-ish here, non-homer approach today. The bottom's not about to fall out. We're on a brutally hard road trip. Toronto's great. Like, they're great. Indiana's a bad matchup. We're not collectively together. We can play not collectively together all year and be okay. But if we want to be great, everyone's got to give of themselves. Everyone's got to make that step. And that's hard. And we're not there right now. Maybe last night will be the stark moment that tells these guys what they have to do and be the moment we look back at that pushes them through, that if they don't figure this out, that we'll see how they are and they'll have to figure out how good they want to be. This has been Locked On Jazz today. Hope you've had a great one. Hope this has made some sense. Don't like to, a little serious, a little melancholy, but I think after being down 40 at halftime, that's probably where we end up. Have a good day. Now go tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA. You'll get Josh Lloyd's daily Monday podcast with the biggest stories from the local experts, and also Hollinger and Duncan is out for this Monday as well. Have a great one. I'm in the playoffs than the last 20 games are. And frankly, the first 20 games of the season are a better way to build your roster for the upcoming season than the last 20 games are. The collective 82 might be better for that. But if you're going to take a snippet of the season by which to evaluate yourself, 20 games is legitimately enough.